I am all in.
With Scott Patterson, an iHeartRadio podcast.
All right. Hi, everybody. Scott Patterson. And this is the I Am All In podcast, iHeartRadio 111 Productions. We are excited. We have a very special guest. Look, first, we're going to talk to our guest. She was an extra on the on Sadie. We're going to talk to her about that and her experiences. She was in the background in a couple scenes in Sadie. And then after that, we're going to break down Hammers and Veils. But before we talk to her, we got another big announcement. Right here, right now, you heard it here first. A third guest is joining us that we're revealing for the live virtual podcast of Friendsgiving, November 11th. Mr. Jackson Douglas, who played
Jackson.
He played Woo. Jackson, correct. So he's going to join us. We're very excited. Terrific guy, terrific actor. It's going to be a lot of fun. Get your tickets. So let's bring her on. Excited to talk to her, get her, her take on what it was like to be an extra on Gilmore Girls. And I already, I know she's going to say, Scott, it was a lot of sitting around. We were sitting around a lot and we were at the crowd. Wait a minute. Here she comes. There she is.
Hi.
Hi. How you doing, Carol V. Beckstrand?
I'm good.
I kind of remember your face.
I was an extra a lot.
I remember you. How are you?
I'm good.
Oh my goodness. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So, so tell us how you got the gig. How did you get the gig on Gilmore? Were you doing a lot of
Gilmore
extra work?
Gilmore Girls or extra work in general?
No. And Gilmore. I mean, had you been doing it prior to,
I had been doing extra work on various shows and I couldn't get on Gilmore Girls and I was a huge fan. Right. I watched the pilot. After the second episode, I started telling everyone I knew, you have to watch this show. It's great. And I couldn't get on. I couldn't figure out who the casting director was. And so, oh my goodness, I can't believe I'm saying this. But the day before I got on Gilmore, I had worked on West Wing. And I still passed to get on the studio lot from West Wing. And I just kind of flashed it really fast. And they're like, oh, go on in. And so I walked into Stars Hollow and I found the person the extras were supposed to check in with. And I was like, hi, did anyone not show up who should have? And they said, yeah. And I said, can I have their voucher? I actually still have it with their name crossed off and my name.
Look at that.
And then I started talking to the other extras. I'm like, who's the casting director? Who do I need to call? And I got the number and I called them and I said, hey, every time you need to fill a townsperson for Gilmore, call me. And so I started doing a lot of Gilmore, but I totally sneaked on the first time.
That is how you get a job in Hollywood. It takes moxie. It takes guts. It takes breaking the law. Look at you. You broke onto the, that's not an easy lot to get onto. I mean, and
well, it was easier before 9/11.
Yes, of course.
This was before.
Still wasn't easy. But you know, yeah, you're right. You're definitely right. But it's harder even now.
It's harder now.
Cause I was just over there and man, they put you through the ringer over there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now they do. But good for them, right? You know, you need the security. So, God, what a great story. That's a Hollywood legendary story. That's how you get a job.
Sneaked on the set.
Yeah.
You
know what? When I used to play pro ball, Johnny Sain used to say to me, you know, you got to figure out a way to win. You know, you got to think outside the box. You got to figure out a way, Scott.
Absolutely.
You figured out a way to win.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. I love that. So how do you, so you've been an extra on other shows. What other shows were you an extra on before you did Gilmore? And what was the experience like compared to Gilmore?
I liked being on Gilmore because I started to know all the same people, all the regular extras. We got to be good friends. Extra work was not my life. I was a teacher. And so the 6 week off in the summer when I had nothing to do, I would do extra work because I like to read And there's so much sitting around in downtime that I would book a gig. I would take three books with me. And then there's a whole lot of hurry up and wait. And so I would just have my book with me and I would just read all day long. And then it's like, oh, we're going to shoot now. Okay. Put my book down, shoot. Actually, I don't know if it's the next episode or the one after where Max and Lorelai, Rory and Dean have a double date and they're in town, they're in Stars Hollow. I was sitting there reading. And when they went to place the extras, like, I like that you're reading, go sit in the bookstore and keep reading. So I'm actually sitting in the bookstore, just reading my book. They're like, okay, back to one, let's shoot it again. And I just kept reading my book. I'm like, I'm getting paid to read.
There you go. Awesome. There you go. Isn't that great? Jeez. That's what we did too. We there was so much downtime that you go back to your trailer and you read anything that you have on hand or what you brought with you. I mean, it's just like,
I would bring a lot of books.
You can catch up on a lot of reading on that set.
Yep. You know, on all sets. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So that was the first time you were an extra on the show, Sadie Sadie. That was the first time?
Sadie Sadie was my first one.
Okay. So you were in the background of that scene when Lorelai was coming to tell me about the engagement, right? Okay. What do you remember about that diner scene when you're pressed up against the window? How many takes did they do on that?
I don't remember how many takes there was for that one because we were outside and all the good stuff was happening inside and they just said, stand there. And we just stood there and stood there and stood there. I think we broke a couple times and we had to get back in the exact same spots, you know, for continuity.
Right.
I remember the multiple takes from when I was more in the action, like two episodes from now, when Lorelai comes to talk to you, there's only four of us in the diner and you turn and you yell at all of us and the camera turns and it's just like me right there. And I'm just kind of like, so that was those I remember more because I'm there and I can listen to you. I was listening to you guys act. And then I remember all of the, okay, let's take it again. Okay, let's shoot it from this angle. Okay, let's do this. But from that particular scene in Sadie Sadie, I don't remember. I was just outside and you couldn't really hear anything.
Right. And Liz Torres was kind of the leader of that whole thing, right? Because everybody mm-hmm. was following Liz because she kept going mm-hmm. back and throwing dialogue back at you guys.
Yeah.
Well, so was it a hot day? Do you remember? Because it was daytime, but do you remember it being particularly hot?
It was August.
Yeah.
So I remember it being very hot on set a lot. And we're supposed to be in Connecticut. So they're like, put a sweater on. I'm like, no.
It's hot. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then I was in Hammers and Veils. It was the one and only time I got to be a Chilton student because after that I got pretty well established in the town. Like, you can't be in Chilton and the town.
Right.
But in Hammers and Veils, I was a Chilton student, and then I'm all over Max and Lorelai's engagement party. So I was pretty well established as a townsperson, and I got to be a townsperson quite a bit. It was fun.
Yeah, that was quite the engagement party, wasn't it? It was quite the setup. I was having engagement party envy, as a matter of fact.
Okay, so this is just me. I take pictures. The attention to detail on that set was ridiculous. They had carved fruit.
Oh, God, look at that.
Everything that said like Max and Lorelai. And it was like, you didn't see all that attention to detail. Like, I was rewatching the episode. I'm like, man, the close-ups and the attention to detail and all of the stuff that they do to make those parties. I remember all of those Stars Hollow parties and they went all out. You can't even see it when you watch the episodes, how detail oriented they got.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's, they leave nothing to chance. And just in case they want to push in and do a close up of a cupcake or something, everything has to be. Yeah. It was truly amazing. So tell us more about that, your memories of being on the Gilmore set. Who did you pal around with? Did you talk to anybody from the main cast or the supporting cast? Were you friends with anybody?
I was mostly friends with the regular extras who were there a lot because, you know, we kind of hung out with each other. But I remember everyone was really, really nice. I remember one time, I think it was a Thursday, and Krispy Kreme started to get really popular right around then. And I think on Thursdays they would bring in Krispy Kremes. And Lauren one day came to set and she was just like giddy because Krispy Kremes were there and she was really excited about it. And then she kind of looked at me and was like, oh, wait, do the extras get Krispy Kremes? I'm like, yes, Krispy Kremes too. They put them on our crafty service table. But I thought it was so sweet of her. I'm like, you're the star of the show and you're concerned that we extra background people are getting Krispy Kremes. I just thought she was just so nice. What I remember was everyone was really nice. You were really nice. I sat behind you in a town hall meeting once, and I think you backed into me or bumped me or something. And in between sets, you turned around and you like put your hand on my knee. And you're like, oh, I'm really sorry. Are you okay? I'm like, yeah, it's normal human interaction. You bumped me. But I just remember everyone being really kind, really nice, and just overly friendly. Max Scott Cohen, he and I were standing together waiting to start a scene. And he accidentally leaned against a cardboard table, and the cardboard table was rickety and it fell over. And one of the ADs or PAs, or I don't remember who, turned around and started to yell at whoever knocked it down and realized it was Scott Cohen. And I was like, oh, this is going to turn on me. And of course, they don't want to yell at the guest star. So they started yelling at me. And I had bent down and we were like trying to pick everything up and fix the table. And Scott was so nice. He was like, he wasn't the one who knocked it over. It was me. And I was like, it's okay. I'll take the rap. I'm just the background person. You're the guest star. He's like, no, it was me. And I just remember everyone being ridiculously kind on set. I was on a bunch of shows, and I can't say that on every show, but Gilmore Girls, everyone was really nice.
Wow. Yeah. We didn't really prance around like we were anything special. We were just sort of there to do a job, you know, like everybody else. Yeah. That's kind of how we felt about it. That's how I felt about it.
I was there on Milo's first day, and he was really shy and quiet. And all of the extras who knew each other really well, we were palling around and being silly, waiting to start our scene. And he was just kind of standing there like, hi, I'm the new guy. And we were just like, who's this guy? And I remember we're like trying to talk to him and make him feel comforting and welcome. And we were doing stupid human talents, and he shared his with us, and we were giggling and just kind of like, okay, nice to meet you. Who are you? And he's like, I'm Luke's nephew on the show. We're like, okay, cool. But he was really kind too. And it was just a fun set to hang out on.
Do you remember what his stupid human talent was, Milo's?
Yes,
I do. What was it?
I do. So stupid. It's so dumb.
We need to know this. Yeah.
He can list all of the dwarfs from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs ridiculously fast.
Wow.
Like all seven just...
That's a talent.
Useless, stupid human talent.
That is not. I was not expecting that.
No, right? Who would say that? So next time you see him, ask him if he can still list the seven dwarfs.
That's so perfect. It's perfect. So those are some great memories. What are some more memories of being an extra on the show? How many episodes would you say you did?
Oh, dozens and dozens.
Okay.
That as I'm rewatching, I will forget. I'm like, oh, I just walked by. I forgot I was in this episode. I have a hard time sometimes because I'm like, oh, look, there's Paul in the background. Oh, there goes Emily, you know, because I know everyone in the background. I'm like, wait, I'm supposed to be watching the main characters. I remember one. I was riding a bike around the town square, just riding the bike. And I think it was too tall for me. I'm kind of short. And I don't know what happened, but I fell off the bike while you guys were filming. And I'm like, I am not going to create even more of a nuisance because I've just fallen over. So I just kind of stayed down, just trying to be quiet until they called cut. And as soon as they called cut, I heard extra down. There's an extra down. And I was like, no, I'm okay. I just didn't want to cause a scene while everyone was filming. And it just was, I don't get embarrassed. I was actually a little embarrassed when they were screaming, there's an extra down.
Like, oh no.
Yeah. I'm just trying not to cause a scene.
Oh man. Yeah. That was what a great instinct though for you. You went down, you stayed down.
Years of live theater.
Yeah.
Years
there you go.
Like they're filming. Don't cause any more problems.
Right. You just go with it. Right. It's like, I meant to do that. Right, I was directed.
Exactly. I meant to crash this bike.
Speaking of which, did you get a lot of direction from the directors on any particular episode about what to do, how to be, you know, that kind of a thing that you can recall?
Not usually the directors. There was usually like one of the production assistant, one of the assistant directors would tell us what to do, where to go. And usually it was like, when someone says this, you walk there. When someone says that, cross over there. But for the most part, no, they gave us a general idea. Do this, make sure you start at the same time every time we did a different take. And there wasn't much direction. There was no like, okay, you're shocked. You look surprised. No, it was a walk from there to there. And it was like, okay, stand there. Okay. So
I think a lot of people don't realize what an important piece that is to any production is. The extras have to respond in a believable way. And it's so, when they don't, it really is glaring and jarring, and it kind of takes you out of that reality. So I know they were very good about that on Gilmore, because the extras on Gilmore, you guys were great. I mean, you were a you know, you helped sell as much as anybody the reality of that town, you know, that was a real place with real people. And that's hugely important. Because when you don't see it and you see people not focused, or they're not, you know, you, like in some productions, even like big budget movies, you see people like, oh, look in the sky, there's God appeared. And you know, somebody's looking over there. Somebody's looking over the island. It's ridiculous. You can see them adjusting like, wait a minute, I should be looking over there. It just takes you out of it. You know, you don't believe it anymore.
I do remember sometimes they would tell us not to like blatantly stare at, you know, whoever was doing the acting, whether it was you or Lauren or Alexis, because, you know, if I was normally eating in your diner, I wouldn't be staring at two other people having a conversation, you know, but we'd be like, oh, look, they're talking. You know, we were saying, no, ignore them. Pretend you're talking to, you know, whoever you're doing. And it was pretty easy to do after a while, because everyone, I mean, we're all professionals as much as a background extra could be. I was just for kicks and giggles when I wasn't teaching, to hang out on set and to have fun.
Yeah, it's hard being an extra, because you guys are, especially in the diner scenes, and there were so many times where the extras were trying to, and they were doing a great job, but you know, they'd drop a fork, or they'd make too much noise cutting a piece of food or something like, or their glass would go down. And it's just amazing, you know, that they're doing their normal stuff. They're being great at it. And then a director yells cut. And then a PA comes over and asks an extra not to drop the fork like that, and not to make the cutting noise, and not to whisper, because you can hear the whispering when you're acting. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of like, move your mouth. And don't produce any sound. It's hard to do.
Oh, speaking of, in Hammers and Veils, is that the one you just watched, Hammers and Veils?
I did, yes.
Okay, so at Max and Lorelai's party, when Lane and Rory are talking and there's a bunch of people dancing in the background, I was mortified watching myself because, and I remember this, there was no music. So we're all dancing in a different beat and they said, do not move your feet. So it's like, you want me to hold my feet still, have no music. And so we're just kind of like, it's the most awkward looking dancing, because we have to hold our feet still, like you said, so we wouldn't be making noise. And it's like, I don't know how to dance and hold my feet still to no music. And I was watching myself like this last night going, oh my gosh, I look so stupid.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, I just saw the episode for the first time, just like, you know, 10 minutes ago, I finished it, or 20 minutes ago. It wasn't distracting. I don't even recall people in the background dancing. But now that you think of it, yeah, there were people dancing. But all I was focused on was the scene with the two girls. So you guys did your job. There was no distractions, you know? I mean, that's telling the story, helping to tell the story.
Well, we were dancing to no music, right, and keeping our feet still so we wouldn't make any noise.
Right. And for the audience listening at home, you cannot have the music blaring while people are acting, because it's a nightmare for the sound department. It's impossible for an editor. It's impossible for the sound department to even deal with that. So yeah, everything's silent. It's a bizarre world that we create. And when they say action, you can't hear any sound but the actors, and everybody else is miming. It looks like a bunch of crazy people. But anyway, are you still doing it, or did you stop being an extra?
I haven't done it for years. It was, like I said, it was something I did just for fun and for giggles. I was like I said, I'm a teacher. I'm still a teacher. I did it to get on the shows I liked and to hang out on set and just to have fun and just to see what it was like being on set. And I just did it for fun. I haven't done it for years, but I did very much enjoy it every time I did it. The funny thing, I said I was a teacher. The funny thing is, when I started teaching, I looked about 14, which was great for extra work because they wanted to cast people who were older, but who looked young. And when I started teaching, my students kept saying, "You don't look old enough to be our teacher. You don't look old enough to be our teacher." And I'm like, "I am, I promise." And then my whole class came in one day with their arms crossed and glaring at me. And they're like, "We saw you on TV last night and you were in high school. You're not our teacher." And I was like, I'm not in high school on TV. It's just pretend. You know, I just look young." But that was very entertaining for all of my students to catch me. And they're like, "We saw you. You were in high school. You're not old enough to be our teacher. You can't be our teacher anymore. You're too young."
Oh, really? Really? They were going to do a walkout or something? They were going to go to the principal's office and get you fired? Like, I don't know.
I have fun with my students. We have a good time. I started at 21 saying, "I'm 30. Right. Just so not think I was older. But it was really helpful to do extra work.
Oh, my God. That's fun. That is just funny. So listen, it's been a pleasure catching up with you. Really. You're a great, great, a great guest, and, really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for inviting me. Yes. It's been fun.
It's fun to get all the different perspectives, you know, 'cause everybody has a story or two and they're just funny and it's just, so, you know, you just never know who's going to bring the heat, you know, and it was really, really a delight catching up with you. And thank you for sharing these stories. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a real honor, and it's good to see you again. And I'm having flashbacks to 20 years ago and hanging out on set with all of you guys.
And thank you for being a teacher. It's quite the calling, a huge responsibility. You're changing lives every day. You know, teachers saved my butt and put me in the right direction in life, and thank God for them. So thank you for doing that. That's wonderful. It's wonderful.
It's fun. I enjoy it.
Good. Good. All right. Take care now. And thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. All right, everybody. We're back. It's time to break down hammers and veils. I'm Scott Patterson. This is the I Am All In podcast, iHeartRadio 111 production. And I am joined with my intrepid team here, my on-air correspondents. We have Danielle Romo, bottom right. We have Riley.
We don't even try Prius. And say her last name.
Prius. Prices. Pricely.
I just like seeing you try, so.
Pringle. Say it.
Pelusis.
Pelusis. I like that. I'm going to remember
that.
Thank you. That's my job to remember that. And the intrepid executive producer of I Am All In, Amy the Sugar Sugarman. There she is, ladies and gentlemen.
It's a good episode.
Good episode. Wow. You know, I got angry watching it. I got angry. I got a little angry.
What made you angry?
I got angry at myself for depriving myself of this brilliant smorgasbord of entertainment.
Wait, is that true? You got a little mad? Like, why didn't I watch this sooner?
I was kicking myself. I was kicking myself in the butt so hard. I don't have a butt anymore.
But what about now? Like now are you kind of like, oh my God, I get to see this now. You know how when you're talking to someone and you're like, you've never seen The Walking Dead. I'm so jealous because you get to start it now.
Right.
Like,
right. Yeah. I didn't have the time. I didn't have the inclination at the time. I didn't care. And I'm saying to myself today, after watching Hammers and Veils, or even during it, like, why didn't you make the time to watch this brilliance? Why? And then I gave my, then I, you know, and then I had a cookie and I was fine. I was okay. It was low blood sugar. That's all.
I mean, I know every episode is a 10 out of 10. Like that's what is astounding about this show.
I think this started out slow though. I think it started off kind of off its normal.
You mean like with the Gilmore dinner?
No. I think the opening scene for me wasn't strong. And I was like, this ain't clicking. It ain't clicking. Lorelai and Rory scene. It just seemed, I don't know. There was just something about it that didn't draw me in as much as the other opening scenes do.
It got hot.
It got very, very hot. Yeah. Boy, I tell you, they really made up for it. That is for sure. And I like to listen to the theme song a little bit, but I kind of skip over it. But today,
do you just skip intro?
I do, but now I listen to it, and I'm going to listen to it every time because I love the song. Because I think the song, I think the Carole King song has as much to do with the success of that show as anything. That theme song triggers people in such a way. And it triggers me. So I'm going to listen to it from now. I'm not going to skip it.
The music is important in Gilmore. Always, you know, the songs they use in the episodes, music is an important part. I know you should be the town troubadour.
No, just keep talking. We'll just talk.
Be the town troubadour. So we can go in reverse, but we do need to talk about that engagement party.
See, like, just look what music does to a normal. You have a couple sentences and everything just gets elevated, right?
Yeah, no, I agree.
Just wanted to
Should we do
it.
The synopsis with Scott playing in the background?
Yes, you want to do it? You want to do it?
Yes. Let's do it.
You want to do it? Like create a mood. Oh, God.
Go, Riley.
All right, here we go. Hang on. No, you don't start until... No. You got to get the mood.
This is episode 2, Hammers and Veils. Air date, October 9th, 2001. Rory's sudden flurry of extracurricular activities strains her relationship with Dean. Meanwhile, Emily is cold when Lorelai finally reveals her big news.
Now the synopsis. You leave it on that open note, right?
God, that was so perfect. That was so perfect.
So that'll be
Riley had a nice tone to her voice.
Oh yeah. She settled in with the music.
So not only was the party amazing, but how about the scene where Lorelai goes into the kitchen at the Independence Inn where Suki has made all the cupcakes, treats, crazy, amazing cakes.
I mean, beautiful.
Pink frosting.
Beautiful.
The time that must have taken to prepare all those desserts with the detail. Insane. Amazing.
I mean, we'll talk about increasing the budget or the cupcake budget on the show. And I don't recall those edibles being served after that scene. Somebody must have on the crew. Or several people on the crew must have taken home some serious treats to their loved ones.
Yeah, I was wondering if they were all real or if they had to be like more plasticky because they had to last for like 5 days. They used the same.
I don't think they do that. I think everything's real.
They wanted to be real.
I think it's all real. Yeah,
that was spectacular. Mm-hmm.
It was, and a much needed scene because now such a great contrast because Lorelai realizes, wow, I may not have. She's not even aware of the mistake that she made cutting her mother out and all of that. Mm-hmm. But I do have friends. These people love me. Look at this. What an expression of love, you know.
I was surprised that Emily and Richard did not show up for the engagement party.
I'm not.
I thought
Why would they?
I don't know. They usually do, just like they showed up for the birthday party. I thought they would show up.
She didn't tell them that she was getting married. But I get, the thing is I get what Lorelai said in that final scene with her mother. I didn't want you. I mean, she was insulting her by way of explanation. She was still insulting her mother by giving her cold hard facts and reality about what it's like to grow up as a daughter of Emily Gilmore and the speech she gave about thousands of maids and how servants have escaped communist regimes and survived. And they can't last 10 minutes with Emily Gilmore. That was hysterically funny. But, you know, Mom, I didn't want you to ruin it for me. I didn't want to share this with you because I don't trust you emotionally because I know you're going to belittle me somehow or tell me that I'm wrong or dumb or something like that. I so empathize with that. I did too.
Yeah.
You know, it's a real trigger for kids when their parents can be, you know, a little too tough on them and so hypercritical and. Mm-hmm. You know, I get why they're doing it, but it's like, Jesus, lay off once in a while and, you know, pat somebody on the head. And she needed a little pat on the head, you know, and she wasn't going to get it. She wasn't going to risk it. And I think that kind of like my daughter doesn't trust me. My daughter wants to cut me out. And I think it's really just sort of Emily anger at herself. That's why I think it's so explosive because that scene was so explosive when Emily, I was wondering, like, when is Emily going to pop? When is she going to say it? Because we know why she's why she's hurt. And she's just allowing Lorelai to go on and on and on and ramping up. And then, boom, she comes up with an uppercut and knocks her out. And what a moment.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting you say that because not all shows would have made the audience privy to why Emily was acting the way she did, because you could have done it a totally different way where the audience finds out from Emily. Mm-hmm. But they chose to let us see that in the episode before. So we're like, oh, we know this isn't going to go well.
That's the difference between an audience participating or an audience just observing and sitting back and not feeling like they're involved in it. So if you make the audience smarter, if you give them more knowledge than the characters have, then they can participate. Yeah. Then they participate. Then they're actively a part of it. That's the beauty of the writing.
Yeah, that's really true, because the writer could have made the other choice. But I do think for us, the fans, the viewers, we really understood more. Mm-hmm. And you empathize with both of them.
And anticipate. And you sit on the edge of your seat waiting for the payoff, because the payoff, it's the setup and then the payoff. It's beautifully executed, beautifully executed. And perfectly placed in the piece, in the hour, in the hour they have, perfectly placed about three quarters of the way through. Structurally, it's perfect. This information has to come out in a scene of extreme conflict to really pay off. And that, you know, by the book, every book you read on writing and screenwriting and that kind of a thing, it's perfectly placed, perfectly executed, well done.
And just perfectly awkward with Max Medina there. Oh, I mean, the whole thing, you're just like, oh, yeah.
And he says,
my parents would love to have dinner with you.
And Noel's nice meeting you. Poor guy.
Like, oh, God, this poor sap. Yuck. No.
But I mean, it was just so funny. He's so great. That hair, the head of hair on Scott Colin, huh?
I always, I still do, but even back then, I remember thinking he was hot.
He's a great looking guy.
That guy's a babe.
He is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's his personality, too. It's who he is.
He's a hot teacher. Yeah, he's like the hot teacher.
I see, you know, he's, what a head of hair. Good God, it was perfectly coiffed.
Yeah, right? I'm getting past how gross that scene was when they were in bed. Remember how much that just made me.
Well, I've been to therapy and I'm through it now.
What?
Yeah, it doesn't bother me anymore.
It doesn't let that go to.
In fact, the fact that you brought it up.
I know,
see, I have the skills now to deal with it. Those memories. It doesn't bother me.
Oh my God, so good.
I'm not going to spin around 20 times and then knock on the door 40 times before I go upstairs.
I'm sorry. I need to shake that off. So now what do you think when Lorelai comes to tell Luke, hey, come on out. I want you here.
I was blown away by that scene.
Yeah.
I was blown away by that whole arc because, you know, he really showed how devastated he was. Mm-hmm. You know, he really did. And even in front of her. And
yeah,
I mean, he was so devastated that he couldn't hide it. And he's good at hiding stuff. Mm-hmm. I beefed up over the hiatus, didn't I? I gained weight.
I didn't notice that.
I gained weight. Jesus.
Did not notice that at all.
I think I was working out too much. It's like, what's going on there?
I guess I could see that when you're behind the counter there, maybe.
I don't know. I looked a little large
No.
for my comfort. No, but I thought those scenes were, you know, if you're sitting there the first look when they were sitting there, the king and queen of the party, the engagement party, right, in their thrones. And the first time that Lorelai looked over to see the diner and the light was on, I thought, uh-oh. And that's a tell that she's thinking about Luke and to the audience. And it's like, whoa. Okay.
Totally.
She's not going to marry Max. She's thinking about Luke. He's over there. How's he feeling? And, you know, she said to him when she got there, you're a friend of mine and I want you to share and be happy for me. But we know. What a bunch of crap. Yeah.
Who leaves their engagement party to go into a diner to talk to the dude filling the ketchup bottles?
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you're filling the ketchup bottles rather than go to her engagement party.
Right.
And she's taking all the time to come and say, like, hey, I really want you to come.
Like, he's inventing chores for him to do to avoid it.
Exactly.
Basically,
that's what I'm saying.
He set a trap for her with the light on. Come on in. Because at that time of night, I guess it's still open. It wasn't too late. It was like 8 o'clock. So maybe he's still open. But
I mean, then she's dancing and it's very sweet. And there you are. And she, you know, your eyes connect. It's just like, come on.
The iconic scene where I sit so next obvious. To the little ballerinas. I mean, that's as iconic an image for Luke as I think there is.
Really? So does that that stands out for you?
Oh, well, like, they really at the time, they really pushed that image in the marketing side of things. It was one of like the shots.
It's very sweet and perfect. And, you know, you feel bad for Luke. Yeah. You're like,
perfect setup. Perfect setup. What a party. I wanted to be at that party.
Oh my God, me too.
And I thought one of the lighter, funnier moments was when Lorelai walked up to Kirk and said, Kirk, can I have that megaphone for a second? She just walked away with it and he just realized looking
so
at her.
Good.
He so reminds good. Me the of a like a rooster, like a perplexed rooster. You know, just kind of like
he's great in this one. It's like perfect. Like he's trying to run the engagement party.
Sector D.
And the scene with Jackson and Suki when they're I always say Jackson and Suki. Because I think the character on True Blood is Suki. I have to check that. But anyway, Jackson and Suki are talking as she's like putting the cookies out. That was pretty good scene too. You know, he doesn't want to get married. He's not ready, but they want to live together. And she's just like, what?
Do you know how hard it is to act that kind of laughter that Melissa acted in that scene? Because it was several different levels of giddiness.
Yeah.
That is not easy. And she did it without, you know, tightening up or putting too much pressure on it or hitting it too hard. Yeah. Oh, man. The thing about her is every episode, even if she has a little bit, the skill level on her is extraordinary. It's just extraordinary. And I know people.
Did you all know that then?
Oh, yeah. Because you do a scene with her and it's like, wow. And I mean, I think especially Lauren would know because she worked with her. And for Lauren to stay that relaxed and that in character and that cool and her timing perfect, because you know she's feeding Suki too, because when you're when you're ramping up doing something like that or laughter or cries or things like that and another person's driving the scene and you got to just continue to feed them lines but not trip them up by screwing up the timing, wow, that's hard. And Lauren makes it look easy.
And she had Melissa had almost the same amount of physical stuff that you had, moving the plates and moving the this and serving the hamburger, and she's doing the same thing and to have to do it the same, just like you said did. I mean, that would be so hard. And she has that physical comedy too, where she has to like burn herself or drop the plate or spill the this, and you're just like,
but you know what, actually in a way it's almost easier than just, you know, not using the props, because you attach the timing and the beats and the actual dialogue to certain props, and it's sort of easier to remember everything and where you are in the scene, because you have to go perform a task and you know that those lines are coming while you are on the way to performing that task, while you're performing the task, and when you're finished that task.
So that shocks me, because somebody was teaching me this thing the other day where so take your left hand and rub it up and down, on the left side. And then you have to take your right hand and tap. And it's like, you know how you're, so to me, that's what that is. Okay, so you take your left hand, everybody has to do it. So you take your left hand and you're like rubbing it up and down, right? Okay, so just like up, down, up, down on your like chest.
Okay.
And then you take your right hand and you have to tap. And it's like freaking hard because your brain, your brain starts to do the right. So to me, that is like what it would be like to have to do all those physical movements while you're trying to act.
This is really easy to do. What is your problem?
Does anyone else think it's hard?
I love how Scott's like slamming himself.
He's not really tapping.
You want me to tap? Yeah, you challenge me to tap? You challenge
now
me?
Now switch. So now with your right hand, rub it up and down. With your
that's
left.
Hard.
That's a little screwy. Hard. That's a little harder.
So hard.
I couldn't do the switch.
The right hand rubbing and then tap with the left. It's like you can't do it.
I got it. I'm doing it.
Well, that's because your brain has been trained to do that type of acting.
I have a trained brain. Yes.
Right. Which I'm like, well, what? I can't do that. I can't do physical at the same time as like,
can you tap your head and make a circle on your stomach too? Okay.
I mean, yeah, I can, but if I switch,
just getting out of
hand. I can, but it's the same thing. It's hard.
Everybody take a deep breath. Good. Let it out.
Okay. I mean, so now I guess we have to talk all about Paris, Rory, Dean, the hammer. There's a whole other thing going on here.
I'm not going to say now, but one of the funniest lines came in these sequences when they were building the house. But yeah, I love the fact that, Louise or who's, is still friendly with Rory, and Paris strongly disapproves of that. And yeah. Gives her dirty looks. And I don't know about Paris revealing so much, intimate knowledge, like that kind of knowledge about what Harvard is looking for and the extracurriculars, how important they are. Why would Paris tell Rory this if she's in direct competition with her? I didn't get that.
That's interesting.
Somebody please explain this to me. Because Paris is supposed to be so smart. She's trying to just crush her enemy. She has cast Rory as the enemy, her competition, somebody that's smart, as smart, if not smarter than her, maybe going to take her place, get into Harvard. Maybe there's one more place and it's the two of them.
Right.
And they go, you know what? We're going to take Rory. And Paris was a little psycho in the interview and they, you know, a little too much, you know?
So my theory, this is just my theory, is that Paris is just so overwhelmed with herself that she just has to spew it out. Like, I've been doing this and 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 this. Ugh. Like she's that.
Then it should have been angrier. It should have been out of control. If for me to believe that she would had taken leave of her senses, because she does have sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even if she is quote unquote confused and somewhat evil, then she needed to be angrier when she was doing it, because she wasn't.
See, my thing on Paris is she isn't actually evil.
Because then I want to.
She's just so insecure.
You know what I'm saying? I don't think she's.
Yeah. No, I know that's what I'm saying though. But I think that's why she's not more mad, because she's just so.
But she had to be in such a state where it just spills out. And then she realizes, oh, God,
I just gave her all the
I
tips.
Just gave her the key to getting into Harvard. When, you know, ugh. So it had to be. Yeah, she had to be out of control. Yeah.
That's kind of exactly how I.
Let's go back and rewrite this scene and reshoot this scene.
But what you just did.
Those are my notes.
So perfect. Oh, I just gave her the keys. Oh, yeah. Like that's exactly.
Because she did.
Right. You could see her doing that.
I wouldn't give that to my enemy. I wouldn't tell my competition how to get into Harvard when, you know, we know that it's, you know, there's just so many spots.
Yeah, I think she just had that breakdown moment where you're just like.
I don't know if I was getting breakdown there. It was just pure, I don't know. It just, I don't know.
Do you like Paris?
When she's vulnerable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
The thing for somebody that is that extreme, I want more background on him. I want to see a scene with her and her parents, more than one scene with her and her parents. I want to see something more significant so I can invest in her a little bit more and have more thoughts about her. And therefore it would be easier to empathize with her, but it's just so difficult.
I liked her.
She's kind of on a desert, right? And it's like hard to empathize with her when she's just
polarizing.
And I think it's good for the drama, right? Because then you're just so root for Rory and Rory's just smelling like a rose all the time. But I don't think it hurts that you sort of flesh out the Paris character a little bit and deepen her and give her some more dimension. She's just feeling a little one-dimensional to me.
Yes. Yeah, so we liked her at the Bengals concert
because
she really, that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then I liked her when she came over and Rory helped her get ready for the date. So you have these moments where you're like, is that the real Paris or is this crazy chick the real Paris?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think we just don't know.
I mean, they give Lane all this. I mean, we know why Lane is and what her whole deal is. I mean, we see her mother in multiple episodes in these classically funny scenes and mm-hmm. almost disturbing scenes, but you don't really see anybody else getting developed. It's kind of lame. You don't see Dean getting developed. We don't never meet his parents. We don't, you know, nobody's really developed there. I mean, I have a sister, and then I have, you know, and I have a daughter.
Right.
But really, I mean, who else is developed in that cast? I mean, is Suki, what do we know about Suki? What do we know about Michelle?
Nothing.
Not really anything. So it's like, but they're such fun characters, and those they're mm-hmm. so, I mean, in Michelle's case, I mean, how can you not love that guy? He even did it again. God. He said, because I can't eat those cookies because then I can't have my Bolo burger later. What does he say? His Bolo burger? That's a great line. I love that guy.
That's the best. I forgot about that.
I almost swore. Sorry. So I almost swore.
He's the best.
He's the best.
Yeah, it's really interesting what you're saying about Paris.
Yeah. I want her develop. I want to see her home life because I want a chance to empathize with her and understand her a little more. And even though I get it because they had the one scene, you got to, you know, I want to see it more. Give me a couple of scenes with Paris and her parents. Or
yeah, I think this is the first episode where Liza is now a series regular as opposed to a guest star.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. Riley, that's right, right?
That's correct. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So they promoted her in season two. Okay.
Yes.
Wow.
Danielle, what were you going to say?
I was going to say we did meet Paris's mom. And she is kind of crazy.
Not enough for me, though. I remember that scene.
I agree with you. We definitely need more. But even just that one scene with her mom, I was like, oh, I kind of get Paris a little bit. But having more of them would, I think, fill in the blanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about she has the same mom as Kelly Taylor on 90210, right? Same actress.
I couldn't offer an opinion on 90210.
Yeah, and I don't think we get to see her again, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
Well, or at least that actress only plays her in that one episode where we saw her at the school. So brief.
Are we pointing out an obvious hole? We're finding a hole. I think we just found one.
Yeah.
I think we're discussing it.
Because we do meet Lane's mom. We know Lane's mom. So it's not like we don't meet these people's families.
But I want an answer, gosh darn it, as to why somebody so smart would reveal such crucial information to the enemy.
It's a very good.
Because she certainly wasn't angry and out of control. She wasn't.
Did you think the Dean Rory fight was justified or Rory just having a meltdown?
Did it feel forced, in other words? No, they're young. I mean, I get it. He had every right to kind of flip a little bit and, you know, he got jealous.
They both needed to just chill the hell out.
You know, come on. He's so in love with her. Come on.
Totally.
Come on. I mean, you can't get denied twice in the same day. I mean, he's sitting there waiting for her at the bus stop. How did he know when she was coming?
Right. How did he know what bus she was going to
be on? Yeah. I mean, he's just like sitting there all day.
It's so true. I didn't think of that.
Like a panting dog waiting. She'll be on the, maybe she'll be on the next one. Oh, well, I'll just sit here. Oh, maybe she'll be on the next one.
Total Forrest Gump just at the bus stop. It's like, I'm starting to really like Dean or Jared Padalecki. I'm not sure which more and more.
He showed up in the shirt and the necklace again.
I know. He showed up in the necklace.
He had the necklace again. Right? Was it leather? I'm thinking leather. I think he's.
I look like a chain to me, but we need to zoom in on that.
The same button undone, the same untucked shirt. You know, it's like a little lighter color for the festivities.
The necklace and Carol V are the new clown pillow. Like spot the necklace, spot Carol V. So good.
I probably at that age would have had the same reaction, you know, getting face planted twice by the same girl that you love in the same day. And it's like, come on, he's just waiting all day for her. He's waiting.
And it's summer, right? It's summer.
He has a point. You know, he has
so
a
is
point.
That okay? So it's summer, am I right? And then Max is going. So this is Max's summer job. He's going to do in Canada. Am I? I'm just trying to like.
He's going. Yeah, Max is going to Toronto on sabbatical.
That must be his what's he summer doing? Job or something. Yeah.
Summer job? What's he? No, he's going to go teach, right?
He's going to Toronto or something.
Yeah, he's going to Toronto. Yeah.
So yeah. So okay. So and Dean did say it's summer. So it's summer break.
It's summer. Yeah. You know, I did mutter to myself.
Yeah, Rory's at summer school.
Right. Yes, she's at summer school. Yes.
Okay.
Everybody's at summer school. Yes, it's all summer. And so I did mutter to myself, I will admit this. I will admit that I did mutter under my breath while I was watching that scene, back off, loser. She's going to Harvard. I did. Mm-hmm. I did do that.
Yeah, I did the same thing where I was like, chill out, dude. Like, you got... forever. Calm down. Let this girl like have a meltdown. Like read the room. She likes you.
Guys,
she's just melting down that she doesn't have any extracurriculars.
She had dirt on her forehead. She had dirt on her cheeks. She was dusty. And I thought she was going to, she looked so tired and dirty. I thought she was going to say, I'm exhausted. And can I take a rain check? But when she, that came out of her mouth, it made total sense. You know? She's got to catch up. She's right. She's got to do the clubs. Oh, there it is. See?
Oh, and then we can really see the necklace there.
Oh, look.
Oh, is that leather?
I don't know.
We're zooming in on the necklace.
Let's see it.
Still look like a weird chain to me. I mean, it definitely has a clasp.
It's not puka shells.
It's like refined puka shells. Like the ones that are shaped.
I think you're right. I think it's not leather. Yeah.
So Riley was right when she thought it was puka shells.
Okay.
And also a little trivia is that the construction foreman, the guy that,
is that Biff Yeager?
Becomes Tom.
That's Biff Yeager. That's the one and only Biff Yeager.
Yeah.
The wonderful Biff Yeager.
Yeah.
That's a hammer? what's that? Oh, that's a hammer. My mom just likes to dress it up. Likes to dress it up. Yeah. So I know.
That hammer is classic.
I know. That was great. I think Dean is completely justified. I'm glad they got back together. They're a nice little summer fling couple thing that's not going to last. But it's sweet.
Do we think Lane ever coming back? That suitcase. The suitcase was on the top of their like Wagoneer.
Yeah, that was good. Good image.
The Kims have a rad car though. I love a Wagoneer.
It's a Wagoneer.
Yeah.
Yeah, the suburban SUV of its time, that Wagoneer.
I do love a Wagoneer.
Oh, you saw them all the time.
Sidebar, they're bringing it back and it's not as cool.
Oh, really?
All. Yeah, it's like coming back any minute, the 2022 Wagoneer. And it is, Google it, it's not that cool. It's not as cool as the Kims at all.
Well, then I'll probably get one. Because it's not as cool.
It would be a nice family truckster for you if you are
Yeah, I've been pining for a minivan with the...
Okay, so I know people that love minivans. Yeah,
I think they're kind of... I drove one for a couple of days on a location, and I just like, this is so cool. I'd like to just have it if I was... If I was single, I'd want...
Remote.
Yeah, exactly that. Right. Those are cool cars, and they drive beautifully.
Not cool. Not cool.
It doesn't matter. It's the convenience and the comfort.
I have friends that drive minivans.
Oh, they're great.
So brutal.
They're truly great.
I help you get one.
Maybe come help me pick one out. You know, I'd like your opinion. Everybody's invited, you know.
Make sure you get the remote
door. Oh, you got to get the remote door. Oh, it's beautiful.
I vote podcast from the minivan.
Oh, my God. Yes. If you get a minivan, we will do it live from the minivan.
Yes. And then maybe, you know, put the graphics, the fancy graphics on the minivan. I'll do that.
We could wrap it in I Am All In.
Get it wrapped.
We can have the I Am All In minivan.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, Toyota.
Yeah.
Give us a ring.
Everybody will think I'm that like guy's cousin that drives around Hollywood and I'm for hire. You know, that guy who dresses up his car. Have you ever seen that guy's car?
I'm sure I have. Is that guy still around?
Oh, I don't know, but he was around for years.
Now we don't leave our houses. Who knows what's happening in the world? We don't really know anymore.
That guy's car was so full of junk. I couldn't believe that the police let him drive around like that. It's like, you can hire me. I'm an actor. And Hey, look, man, he's out there trying. Good for him. I hope it worked out.
Did
for
you
him.
Ever do background?
No.
Like before you. Mm-mm. So you went from like baseball to you got like a part.
I know. I did background in plays.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. I was in an orgy scene at the Actor Studio in New York during the performance of, God, was it Rasputin or was it Miss Julie?
Clothes on?
Yeah. I mean, it was just sort of like loiny, clothy things.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
out? Like, did you have to make out with someone?
I think I did, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes. And I also did background and it wasn't really background, but it was like a one or a two liner in Miss Julie at the Actor Studio. Karen Allen, starring Karen Allen.
I loved Karen Allen, Starman.
Yes.
Karen Allen was in Starman.
Yes. And she had at the Actor Studio, it was kind of small backstage area, and they had given her a private dressing room. Mm. And one day during rehearsal, she came out and she was very upset, and she said somebody, my watch is gone, my Rolex, my diamond gold crusted special. Oh, no. And it's like worth
stolen.
You know, tens of thousands of dollars stolen. So everybody searched for it. And
was it found?
I found it.
And where was it?
In her dressing room.
Oh.
And then I got accused of stealing it.
Of stealing it and planting it. I knew it.
That's how it goes for me, man.
I watch only Murders in the Building, and so
no I reward. Knew that was I didn't happen. Get rewarded. I got accused. No. Oh yeah.
They're like, you planted it after you stole it.
Oh my God. Oh my God. But that did not put me off helping people or saving their lives.
Thank goodness. Riley, this seems like the perfect moment for you to take over.
I'm ready. I'm Riley, and this is your pop culture. We'll go through this one a little quickly. Lorelai is trying to figure out her veil length with Rory for the wedding, and Lorelai says, and then there's the full-on Diana. Diana, Princess of Wales, was a member of the British royal family and being the first wife to Charles, Prince of Wales. Diana's veil was made of 140 meters, 25 feet of tulle. The fairy dust wedding veil was embellished over long nights by a single, secret embroiderer.
The wedding was... One person made that veil. Wow.
What are you guys talking about? I was just over here playing my axe.
This is like
somebody getting married?
Trying to rub your left hand and tap with your right hand. We have a lot of things happening right now.
We just need strobes and we'll be complete.
Oh God! If we had visual, I think I'd have a problem. Okay, keep going, Riley. I'm focusing.
The wedding was iconic, and the ceremony itself was seen by a crowd of 3,500 people, and 750 million people watched it on TV at home.
Wow.
Louis Madeline.
750 million?
750 million.
Was it pay-per-view? Whoa. Did they do pay-per-view? No. That would have broken all the records. That's a missed opportunity.
They could have made a lot of cash.
I bet you Meghan Markle and Harry would have done pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Did they do pay-per-view on theirs? They should have. They should have had Dana White like do the whole thing for them.
Yeah, they wouldn't have had any problems with their budget.
And before the bloody MMA fight, we're going to do Harry and Meghan's wedding. $299. There we go.
Wait, Danielle. Oh, no. Danielle's now holding up the strobe light. Oh, God. I know, I can't look at that. Keep going, Riley.
How am I supposed to keep going?
Okay. But Scott, we might need it a little softer. Okay, there. Go right. Okay.
Louise, Madeline, and Paris are talking about grades and the study schedules at Chilton. Louise says, Princess Grace didn't go to college. And Paris says, thank you for the history lesson, AJ Benza. Grace Kelly was an American actress in the mid-1950s who later became Princess of Monaco. Her family had to pay a $2 million dowry to the prince, and she said to have to take a fertility test before the wedding.
Grace Kelly's family had to pay for her to marry the Prince of Monaco,
That was a $2 million admission fee?
Yeah, that seems like a lot.
Jesus.
That'd be like $20 million.
But wait a minute. That was back in when? The 60s?
Mid-1950s.
Mid-50s,
yeah,
right?
Be literally like $20, $25 million.
Easy. $40 million.
Whoa.
Wow.
Weird.
So AJ Benza is an American gossip columnist and television host. Benza popularized the catchphrase, "Fame ain't it a bitch."
I can.
AJ Benza reference does not land as well 20 years later, because I know who he is, but like, I bet new people don't not know who that is.
Benza reportedly punched an employee of Howard Stern's show in the face, alleging that the employee was screening out positive listener questions about him. Rory asks if Lorelai is okay after the interaction with Emily. Lorelai is being sarcastic and refers to her level of okayness as perfect as the Victoria's Secret women. Lorelai says, "I have hit a level of perfection that has rarely been seen outside of the Victoria's Secret catalog." Victoria's Secret is American lingerie, clothing, and beauty retailer.
I'm just gonna play my guitar.
Upbeat and peppy. Lorelai is venting about Emily rushing their dinner. Lorelai says, "Yeah, well, by the time I could get my jaw off the ground, Speed Racer had taken my plate." In 1967, Speed Racer made its debut, igniting the first Japanese anime cartoon to ever succeed in the United States. Yoshida, the creator, was inspired by Elvis's style. The 2008 film adaptation starred Emil Hirsch and Matthew Fox. Sadly,
ooh, bad movie, by the way. Bad movie.
It flopped, yeah.
Yeah.
Rory sees Paris's building skills at the construction site, and Rory says, "Funny, I never pictured you as a Bob Vila kind of girl."
Mm.
Robert Vila is an American home improvement television show host. He earned his fame for being the host to This Old House, at a home improvement show he hosted from 1979 to 1989. Tim Allen, American actor and comedian, saw Bob as a rival and made attempts to outdo him.
Ooh.
Rory is talking to Dina.
As Tim Allen on Home Improvement, or Tim Allen in real life? On Home Improvement, I'm assuming.
On Home Improvement.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think he's mean like that.
Not Tim Allen, the actor.
Seems like a nice fellow.
And like, why would he care?
Rory is talking to Dean about her lack of extracurricular activities, and Rory says, "Paris has been accumulating these things since she could walk. I mean, she has a list of good deeds that could bump Mother Teresa off the Harvard list." Mother Teresa was an Albanian, Indian, Roman Catholic nun and missionary. When she won the Nobel Prize in 1979, those who honored her praised her not only for her commitment to the poor, but her managerial skills as well. In 1997, she had a state funeral in India, which means that the government of India felt she was an important enough person in the country to pay for her funeral.
Was that pay-per-view?
Pay-per-view.
No.
Rory and Paris go back and forth near the bulletin board as Paris attempts to convince Rory not to go to the construction project. Paris says, "If you thought that we had some kind of deep Thelma and Louise thing going on here, but we didn't." Thelma and Louise, a 1991 film directed by Ridley Scott, starring...
Oh, yeah. Give it a try. You got it. We practiced this.
We did.
Go ahead.
Get ready. Give it a try.
Starring Susan Sarandon.
Nice.
Yes. And
well Gina struck, Davis. McEnroe. Well struck.
Thank you. George Clooney. I get Clooney wrong.
Clinic.
George Clooney auditioned 5 times to play the character JD that Brad Pitt ended up playing. And Gina Davis was nervous to do the steamy hot scenes with Brad Pitt.
Oh, Brad Pitt was smoking hot in that movie.
He was great in that role.
He's still smoking hot now. He's like my number one.
He's my number one, too.
I understand why.
No. It's like, are you kidding me?
I mean, correct. He is so smoking hot, and he's super smart and hilarious.
And he's a cool dude. He's a cool dude.
I love everything about him.
He's a cool dude.
Yeah. I don't know him, but.
I don't either. I saw him from afar.
I've seen him. I've been near him, but.
He's a tall drink of water.
He is just everything. Dreamy. Love him.
If you were in my trailer at Gilmore when he pulled up on his motorcycle with Clooney,
that's right.
Got off, took his helmet off, the blonde hair tumbled down.
Iconic. Like, just like,
I mean,
it
was just like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
Who do you think you are?
What is going on?
Like that. He really is epic. God.
Speaking of epic.
I hope he's listening.
I hope he's a good producer, too. He produces really, really great films.
I know.
You know, there's a lot more to him than, you know, a hairline and blue eyes.
I know. I think we would be a great couple. I'm just saying.
Let's get it going. Are you available, though? Are you?
And for Brad Pitt,
ish?
Sure.
Yeah, right. He's your hall pass. and your
I'm available for
your currently definitely. Depressed boyfriend is now hearing this information for the first time.
Oh, I'm hot. I got to take this. I'm sweating.
But okay, I mean,
Riley, keep going.
So if you sweaty. Go to somebody and it's like, hon, you know, Brad called.
I would just be out.
He just wants to have drinks. Dude. He just wants to have drinks. I'm going to go. You go ahead and you know, you put on the macaroni and cheese, the Kraft macaroni and cheese. And I'll be back.
It's a meeting. Yeah.
It's just, it was just, oh. Yeah, we're talking. Yeah, you know, we're talking. Maybe he comes on the podcast. You know, Scott's really like, the show's spiking. It's like really snowballing. And you know, he expressed an interest. So it's just a meeting. I'll be back. It's we're going to do like, it's going to be 20 minutes, maybe 2 hours. Maybe it'll be 6 hours. Maybe it'll be a day. I don't know.
It'll be like 8 days. It's totally fine.
Maybe Wait, 8 days.
Danielle, if you had to have a meeting with Brad Pitt, do you think you could act normal?
Yes.
No.
You said that with real confidence.
He doesn't do it for me.
Oh, whoa. Hush that mouth.
I know.
Hush
unpopular
mouth.
Opinion. Unpopular really? Opinion.
And who? Oh so God. Who does do it for you?
Like
it's not the cat out of the bag.
Like an Ashton Kutcher or what? Dermot Mulroney or.
Wait, I love. First of all, it's Dermot Mulroney.
It's Dermot.
Yeah, but I love Dermot Mulroney. But that's
well,
such
he's a babe.
But he's so old for you.
I know. I was thinking of somebody that was older, oh, like old. Brad Pitt's level.
Oh, okay. But do you love Dermot Mulroney now or like Dermot Mulroney in My Best Friend's Wedding?
My Best Friend's Wedding started it, but I still think he's very attractive
now. Wait a minute.
Now.
My Best Friend's Wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Cameron Diaz, Dermot Mulroney, Julia Roberts.
Gotcha. Got you. No, now I see he's dark hair.
Yeah. But he's gray now.
With
but
the scar.
He is super hot. But this is like my Michael Keaton thing. So right, I... Right. Worship Michael Keaton.
Right.
Like I love him.
As you should.
Thank you. But one of my friends was like, Batman Michael Keaton or Birdman Michael Keaton? And I'm like, Batman Michael Keaton. And he's like, that guy doesn't even exist anymore. Because it's like he's older now. But I still love Michael Keaton. I've been watching him he's on 60 Minutes.
Yeah.
Hello, Michael yeah. Keaton. I love
I had him. A restaurant thing with Michael Keaton. He's very
like
quick.
You bumped into he's him. Very,
no. I was waiting for a table or we were going to our table and he kind of walked in and or he came up from his table and we just exchanged a funny thing. He's friendly, but he gets the kind of weird humor that I was going with and he kind of laughed and I just thought, wow, that guy's got a sensibility, yeah. You know,
here's what's super cool. Weird. This is the first time I've talked about this. I believe somehow like cosmically Michael Keaton and I are like meant to be friends or we're like together in a previous life, okay. Because I literally bump into him constantly.
Right.
I mean, we're talking 30, 40 times I've been in the same restaurant as him, walking down. He does live in my neighborhood. So like walking down the street,
well,
like, everything's
there
so weird.
Hmm.
At the gas station, at the this, like it's really weird.
Maybe he's stalking you.
I don't think so. No. I think it's just that we are neighbors. It's just that we're neighbors and we go to like the same place. But it is still weird.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Hey, Michael Keaton.
So no.
Actually, real name, Michael Douglas. Total sidebar. You know, his name isn't Michael Keaton. It's Michael Douglas.
Are you? And he changed it because it was a Michael Douglas already.
Correct.
Wow.
I know the things you learn on this podcast. Keaton. So Michael Keaton is actually Michael Douglas. But he couldn't be Michael Douglas.
Wouldn't it be funny if Michael Douglas's name was Michael Keaton?
Totally. It would have been like, what a waste. No,
wait a minute. Yeah. I changed my name because you had to. No, but I changed my. Well, we screwed up.
Well, unclear if Michael Keaton is like making a reservation at a restaurant, if he says Michael Keaton or Michael Douglas. And it doesn't really matter because
both
will get him a table. Right. Yep.
Yeah.
There you go.
So Dermot Mulroney. That's your guy.
Yeah.
That's your guy.
You could throw in Jude Law. You could throw in Leo DiCaprio.
DiCaprio. Well, this is a wide
range. Just Brad Pitt. I could have a meeting with him. It'll be fine.
It's very generous of you. Very generous.
We're so sorry to everyone listening.
Riley, we don't mean to leave you out of this. Who's yours? She's nodding her head like, no, don't get me involved in this. Stop. stuff. She's like, no, please don't bring me into this.
We're talking like older, or can I just be anybody?
No, anybody.
Yeah, you can just go with who you want.
Just anybody.
Mine's an athlete, but Anthony Davis.
Who's that?
I don't even know who that is.
Who's that?
Never heard of him.
The running back?
He played for the Lakers.
Basketball player, Anthony Davis. Okay.
Yeah, we're fine with that. Nobody's going to
think anyone's going to compete. It's okay.
Okay. No, hey.
But you know different who strokes. Did compete?
Who did compete, Riley?
Who?
Elizabeth Taylor. She has 7 husbands.
And she is mentioned in this episode of Gilmore Girls.
Wow. She brought it back around. Look at that. That's art. That's craft right there. Shut us up. Go.
The good thing is we don't get off tangent till the end of the episode, which is less irritating to people. Okay. So like everyone that stopped listening 10 minutes ago, they got the good stuff already. So they're like, it's all.
Amy means they got everything before the pop culture.
Yeah, they're like, it's fine. We're just going to tune in next week for Red Light on the Wedding.
No, but pop culture now is a thing.
It's a thing.
I know, people really like it.
No, it's like a thing now. Yeah.
Do I have this line right from this episode? And then, after all that planning, the reception will still be a disaster because no matter what you do or how carefully you plan, halfway through one of those nauseating Bette Midler ballads, someone's getting drunk, someone's sleeping with someone else's wife, and someone's chicken Kiev is landing on the cake.
There you go. Luke.
So good.
Good speech.
So good. I didn't deliver it quite as well as you, but I tried.
Hey, man.
Danielle,
all you have to do is try.
Sorry, I was looking at Paris Hilton. My favorite line is from Emily, and she says, "Your head is much too big for a veil."
Oh, that was going to be mine. That was a great line. Did you blurt out laughing like I did when she said it?
Yes.
It was good.
My favorite line is from Rory, and she says, "Dean, I promise the only way you could be more important to me is if you had a Kit Kat bar growing out of your head."
Dean said that to Rory?
Rory says that to Dean.
Rory says that to Dean. Sorry, I should pay attention more. Yeah, favorite line now is off the table. Danielle has trumped me. She has stolen my line. I am lost in the middle of a desert looking for another line. Let me see. Let me pick one out of the many, many great lines. Help me out, guys. What was another great line? You know, I had a good line that I laughed out loud at a line of mine.
not
ashamed to admit it. But I think I'm going to go with the Scott Cohen line to the Max line to Emily. Oh. Nice meeting you.
Yeah.
And it was just more in the acting than the looks that made me blurt out laughing. But Michelle had, I think the Michelle line, the Max Medina line is now scrubbed. I've just downloaded a better line. It's the Michelle line. I cannot have that cookie. I am on 1500 calories a day. If I have that cookie, I cannot have my Bolo burger later.
Oh, was it a Boca burger?
Boca burger later. That's the line for me. Thank you very much.
Wow. Well, we made it. We made it through. Next week, I cannot wait.
Why?
Red Light on the Wedding Night.
Red Light on the Wedding Night? And that's it, huh? That's going to be it for Hammers and Veils. We sliced and diced that one, didn't we? We even rewrote it. Now we're like not only analyzing, we're offering suggestions to improve the episode. I mean, what is going on here? All right, everybody. We're going to wrap it up. But don't forget to get your tickets for Friendsgiving, our live virtual event on November 11th. And that's going to be it. Thank you, ladies. Thank you, Danielle. Thank you, Riley. Thank you, Amy. Amy, don't cry. I know you're upset. I know.
I just started to get ahead to Red Light.
I understand. You're emotional. It's emotional unpacking all of this stuff after watching these brilliant episodes. Anyway, I am Scott Patterson, and this is the I Am All In podcast with iHeartRadio 111 Productions. We will see you next week. Stay safe, everyone. I'm
everybody. And don't forget, follow us on Instagram at I Am All In Podcast and email us at Gilmore@iHeartRadio.com. All you Gilmore fans, if you're looking for the best cup of coffee in the world, go to my website for my company, ScottyP.com, S-C-O-T-T-Y-P.com, ScottyP.com. Grade 1 specialty coffee.